I mean, I literally experienced it all. And that was not easy. Like, that is the part of my near-death experience that was not easy.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creators, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. Twice a week, we will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder.
Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Joel Schroeder, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Super excited about today's episode. I've got Sherry Ame in the house. Sherry, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
I am so ready.
So this is, in true unconventional life spirit, is going to be quite a unique episode. Sherry is a number one best-selling author, international speaker, near-death survivor, heart transplant recipient, and founder of Live Big, Be Happy. She's also a writer at influencive.com. So check this out. About 6 years ago, Sherry died in her husband's arms, and it was after 10 minutes after walking into the emergency room. So she couldn't be resuscitated for over 90 minutes. This story is, I personally, after having my own near-death experience, I'm super excited to dive into it. But she's literally leveraged this personal story to build this super impactful brand. And her vision is to empower 10 million people around the world to live a life of no regrets. So if you're tuning in at all wanting to do something with your life and not actively living it in this moment, you'll make sure to want to pay attention. Sherry, welcome to the show. Fill in any gaps I might have left out and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
Thank you so much, Jules. It's such a pleasure to be here. Hello to everybody listening. That pretty much sums up what's been going on with my life for the past 8 years, I would say. And really what's been going on behind the scenes has been this journey of me rebuilding my whole life from the day of, you know, this experience where I flatlined right in the emergency room. And it was the beginning of this brand new life that I'm living now on my terms. I mean, that was the moment that everything had shifted in my life. So I was CEO of my own tech firm. I had been working for startups and engineering firms, advertising firms for years right after college. And, you know, I had just gotten married right when this happened. And so that moment in the emergency room when they could not get my heart restarted and were ready to call my time of death. And one man, one doctor in that room said, "We are not giving up on her."
Goosebumps.
Right? I mean, and Jules, so many miracles had to happen. You know, besides that, so many miracles had to unfold to transfer me to another hospital, you know, to have another hospital surgical team come all the way up to Connecticut, where I was, to pick up a body that had no heartbeat for hours at this point. So what made this surgical team from one of the top hospitals, you know, in the world, come all the way up to get this lifeless body? So many miracles had to unfold for me to really get here. And what ended up happening was, once I was transferred to this other hospital, I remained in a coma for the next 3 months. And I was literally one of the first pioneer patients to try out this new bionic heart, because my heart had just failed. And
how old were you at the time, just so our listeners get some context?
So when it happened, I think I was 35.
Yeah. Crazy. So,
yeah. And literally, like I said, just got married, you know, CEO of my own company. I'm like, I did it. Right? I'm feeling all good, right? And then it just all comes crashing down.
Yeah.
So So this bionic heart, you know, it saved my life for the next, I was able to go home and live on it for the next 4.5 years. And it was after that, that I was eventually listed for a heart transplant. So it's been many years of me recovering from this tragedy, but what's been such a blessing, it has been social media. And it's really how I was able to start creating this brand to rebuild everything I lost, because I lost my company during this whole years of trying to get my body back into a state of health. And so I lost everything.
I'm excited to dive into some of those details in just a minute. But for our listeners, and maybe you know your experience too, I find that the world, God, divine source, whatever your relationship is to this higher thing, has a funny way of just rearranging our lives in the most unique ways. And for me, I think the first time it really happened was when I was 25 and had a business partner embezzle a bunch of money and debt $200,000 overnight. And then lost everything over 9 months. And then flash forward a few years later, then I had my wakeboarding accident, my own near-death experience, rearranging everything. Yes. And now I am now. And I feel like each time I go through almost this like chrysalis where I get broken down into this like mush and then ultimately learn to rebuild and regrow. And if you put yourself like in that time period, you know, before the accident had happened, you know, like you said, you had this company, you were like made it in terms of the entrepreneurial spirit in the game. Would you say, knowing what you know now about yourself, did you find before you were living for yourself at that point? Or did you find even though you were successful, it still wasn't kind of in alignment? Or give me kind of the world of your experience like before that happened. And I'm curious if it maps out to mine and maybe some of our listeners.
Yeah. So my life, it's such a good question, by the way, because I see now that how I lived my life before, even though I was successful, right, and getting on that path of really exploding my entrepreneurial journey, the motives behind what drove me, I realized were all stemming from a place of fear, a place of lack, a place of like something was missing in my life. And I had to go out and fill it by being kind of like the best at everything that I did. And it was almost this energy that I had to constantly prove something to somebody else. Not so much myself, but to somebody else. So I was constantly people-pleasing. I was constantly giving my energy resources away to others. And what happened was it worked for so long. Right? And what's interesting is I would always go through this cycle of burnout and then having to recover and then burnout and then having to recover again. And it was just like this, I don't know how else to phrase it other than it felt like I was constantly beating against something, trying to get somewhere. And what's so fascinating is that since this whole spiritual awakening, whatever you want to call it, and now having to, under really dire circumstances, you know, right after this transplant, and I needed full body rehabilitation. So when I started my brand, I was in a wheelchair, right? So that was not easy. And that had its own emotional impact on me, you know, feeling not good enough. How am I going to hold up to other people that are experts in the field when here I am feeling broken and not whole? But what's so interesting is I was able to take that brand and convert it into an income producing brand, creating a business within months, even under these dire situations where I was limited physically, I was limited emotionally. I mean, every possible way I was quote unquote limited. I had so many things going against me. But because I worked so much on myself, and because this whole tragedy, this whole experience, I don't even like to use the word tragedy anymore, because honestly, I don't resonate with that. Let's just be honest. My death was the greatest thing to happen to me. All right. Well, we can get back to that. But really, like, what my situation required of me was to get really creative with the few skills or the few senses or access to my power that I had available. So maybe I could not leave the house and join, like a meetup for entrepreneurs. And maybe I couldn't do all those other things, but it forced me to find creative ways to meet new people.
Yeah.
It forced me to find creative ways to get my message out into the world.
Yeah, so good. I'm so excited to dive into those a little bit deeper in just a few minutes. And I know a lot of us that are listening, I mean, you don't necessarily have to literally see the light and die or have a big, you know, tragedy or wake up experience to have these kinds of awakenings. But I do find that, you know, you might be in your job right now, for example, or you might have a family to support, or maybe you've got a lot of student debt, and we have these constraints. And it's like, how do you learn to find your voice and find your way working with what you have? And so I know you've got a lot to share about that. So for those hearing that, we'll tag on that in just a few minutes. But let's talk about what actually happened. And I know you've shared this story on major TV networks. You've been interviewed so many times about it. And I would love to, just from the perspective of just the high level, what happened? And then what was it like for you flatlining? Do you remember anything? Did you go anywhere? Like, what was that experience like? Because as someone that has also had a near-death experience, like for me, it was a white figure, six black shadow council member in a conversation. But everyone has their own experience with it. So what happened? What was it like? Just bring us into your world a little bit there.
Yeah. So I remember the moment that I died. And I should clarify, I don't remember anything of that day. Although my husband, months later after it happened, he described to me what happened right before I flatlined. And all of a sudden this wave of like, I remember. So even though I don't remember the day and I don't remember the context of that happening that day, whatever he told me happened right before, I actually do remember. And what happened was, I guess I was on the table and they were laid me flat. So I went into cardiac arrest. So my heart was in heart failure for about 3 weeks, maybe longer, but I was having symptoms that were misdiagnosed. They were not caught. So that's kind of why 3 weeks later, I just collapsed. So that's what that was. It was cardiac arrest, which is different from a heart attack. It's cardiac arrest is your heart just stops. It's no longer beating. And so I remember not being able to breathe and the nurse wanting me to lay flat on the table. And I remember reaching my hands up and saying to my husband, pick me up to lift me off the table because I said I couldn't breathe. And he told me that that's when I flatlined. So that's, I actually remember. Oh. Yeah. Right. I know. I just got that too. So I actually remember the split second right before I died. When I first crossed over, I remember just pure white. I was in a pure white space and I remember just feeling light as a feather. And I knew I had died. I absolutely knew from the moment it happened that I died. And it was shortly after that I was taken actually to this location that was actually deep on the basement of the ocean floor. And it was at the basement of the ocean floor that I was surrounded by, and I think mine was nine beings. And although I'm always trying to figure out the number, but I think the way they were spaced out, it was either six or nine, but I've never like locked it in on anyone, but, and I call them my council. And it's so funny. And they were all black. So I remember them looking like, you know how scuba divers have like,
yeah,
black. So this was the same, except, you know, no oxygen tank or anything. Mm-hmm. And then it was covered completely over their face. So you couldn't make out that they were female or male, right? Anything
like that. It's like so trippy. We literally like, I think I've seen the same thing. It's crazy. Really? So they're really exactly how you're describing it. And like a six and a council.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. My God. So for everyone that's listening, we've never talked about our mutual experiences before, and I was like, Sherry, come on air and let's talk about it. So this is, I'm learning new. I'm hearing this for the first time myself.
Yeah, and I remember feeling so safe. So I was in the middle, I was floating, and this was all hovering above the basement of the ocean. And the first thing people always ask me is, oh my God, you were on the bottom of the ocean. Weren't you terrified? And I keep trying to describe, well, it's not 3D reality anymore. So it's not the same. It's not like you're like, oh my God, I'm going to drown. We literally were just breathing and fine underwater. And it was right hovering above the basement floor. And I remember being like, I feel so safe. I feel so protected. I feel so loved. I never felt threatened. I knew they were there. I knew they were there as counsel, that they were there to welcome me. And I remember saying to them, I love this. Like, let's go. I'm ready. And I felt so free. I mean, the weight of the world that I felt from the life I had just left, the burden of being sick and feeling like I had ruined everybody's life, you know, because I had gotten sick and I had disrupted, you know, the people that I loved, I had disrupted their lives. And I remember thinking, everything's okay. I'm okay. I see what it's like now. And I remember thinking, they don't even have to worry. Like, I know they're going to be okay too. So I remember just being so peaceful. And I said to them, I'm ready to go. I mean, I had made my decision. I was ready to go. And I remember getting frustrated because no one would respond to me. And some time went by, excuse me, and I was still frustrated. And then I realized, oh, wait a second. I think I need to get still and silent. Mm. And then I realized that they were communicating to me, but, you know, telepathically. Right? And the message I kept getting was, you're making this decision too quick. And it was shortly after that I was swept away by like just time and space collapsed. And I went into this, it's almost like everything went into this whirlwind of just the collapsing of time and space and the paradigm and the whole physical reality that we're used to. It just collapsed. And I was instantly taken right into my lifetime review. Only this time what I discovered was it wasn't just the lifetime review of the life I just left. It was of all of my lifetimes. Yeah. And that was intense. And that it is during a lot of that time that I was shown literally how the world works, how interconnected everything. I found out the answers, the reasons I got sick, the reasons why certain things happen. I found the answers to everything you could possibly ask about living here in this universe. And
I get excited hearing that.
I know.
I get so excited hearing that. I know some of our listeners. So you were, this was going on for like 90 minutes in real time. Is that correct?
Yeah, so it was pretty much going on during that whole time that they were trying to resuscitate.
Yeah, so yeah. Wild. Yeah. I know all of us, it's just natural tendency to want to know, why do these things happen? And, you know, for those hearing this, just mapping that in your own life, like I know I just ended the relationship with my partner 2 years. I thought we were in life partnership. Why does this happen? And then slowly these pieces, they reveal themselves. And so if you could speak to that for just a moment on how we can try to map things out that we don't understand, good, bad, confronting, easy, what you learned in some ways.
Yeah, there's definitely a reason everything happens. Everything happens. Everything is connected. You know, nothing is a one-time deal set out to make your life miserable. And I think when we're in the midst of tough times, it's very, very easy to feel that. Especially if you get caught in the trap of comparing your life to somebody else, that maybe from the outside you're seeing their life is running smoothly, you know, and yet your life, you've had financial trouble all these years, your relationships aren't working out, you know, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of us, we see these reoccurring patterns in our lives. And we're like, why doesn't that other person have that exact pattern? And really, what I saw, you know, was that we are all connected. And given the different lifetimes, plural, that I experienced, I actually got to go in to different lifetimes. I got to experience the lifetimes that we all perceive as those are perfect on the outside. I got to perceive the lifetime of the person that's, you know, maybe just killed some people. I mean, I literally experienced it all. And that was not easy. Like, that is the part of my near-death experience that was not easy. But it was so real. And it was the truth of the whole, we are one. You know, it's really easy to talk about that in theory. And then when somebody, you know, this might be a little controversial for some, but, you know, and then you hear of, you know, a murder or something like that, you know, a really big tragedy, and you think you're separate from that. And the harsh reality is we're not. It's all connected on an energetic, on a soul level. And what we see out in the world is a reflection of different parts of ourselves. And while you don't resonate looking at a murderer, you may really be impacted by that because maybe it's reflecting a certain type of anger that you're holding within yourself. Maybe it's anger with somebody else. Maybe it's anger at yourself for not being good enough. And that's the hard part about what I learned and sharing that with the world, because it's not an easy thing to face.
Yeah.
You know, that's not an easy thing to face. And I think because I lived it, you know, in so many words, I can see now what we are one means.
I see,
I feel it.
Yeah. I can only imagine having this like opening and almost these downloads coming in at such an accelerated rate. And then actually the process of coming back into a physical human body, and then the process of rehabilitating that body, and now the process of being physically healthy for the most part. And then how do you take this knowledge and this wisdom and bring it to the world? And that's something that I often struggle with sometimes too, and I know some of our listeners can relate to, is that we have or feel this knowing inside of us that there's more. And we have these insights and these wisdoms and these ideas that are only ours. And for those listening to this right now, if you have an idea and think that someone else is going to have it too, know that you're the one that was given that vision. And only you are the one to bring that vision. And sometimes there's this disconnect of knowing that and actually being able to communicate it, embody it, build a business out of it, make money from it, all these pieces. And so what could you say to those hearing that you know, that might fit what's up for them in their life right now and how you, through this last 6 years of your journey, have been able to kind of connect those two?
Yeah. And I think, tagging on to the conversation of like the concept of we are one, and really living that truth, what it did was it allowed me to forgive myself for, I had to go through this period. Talk about, you know, assimilating back into the world. When I came back, I actually went through, and I was told to do this. I went through a process where I had to forgive myself for everything that I was. Everything that I was. All aspects of me. And that was a tough one because that requires us to take a look at all parts of ourselves, the parts of ourselves that get angry, the parts of ourselves that are showing up, that are hiding, the parts of ourselves that aren't a good friend to others, the parts of ourselves that aren't loving to ourselves. And I had to walk through one by one and forgive myself for the whole of me. And through that process, I began to fall in love with the whole of me.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that that is such a critical step in bringing your truth. Because what is stopping us from sharing what we know, like you said, that download is your voice, it's your vision, and you hold that, and it has been entrusted in you to shed light and bring that light out into the world. And to do that, we have to be okay with ourselves, our voice, our thoughts. But how can we be okay with that if we're full of judgment of ourselves, if we don't love ourselves, if we're comparing ourselves to others, if we don't feel enough, right? So yeah. The forgiveness process is about return. Everything is about returning to the whole. And the way I show up online now, and I'll give you an example, a business example. I cannot and am not willing anymore to show up as the what's the right word in business. I was like, I had to show up as the expert in my field. I am your go-to person, and that's what you're taught, right? That's how you're taught to stand out and build authority. But see, that wasn't being true to myself. Because the truth really is, what are we an expert at other than just being ourselves? Right?
So good.
So I literally decided that if I was going to rebuild my business, my company, everything I lost when I died, I was going to do it the way that I learned how to live in heaven. And that I was going to trust in that, because there was nothing more real than what I experienced in heaven. What I experienced was more real than this world. Right?
Amen to that.
Totally. I'm glad to that, right?
Yeah, totally. Two things. So you know, for those hearing this, I've done a lot of inner work myself, especially the last few years, specifically since my near-death experience and other things. But I'm wondering if there's a practice that, for those hearing this, around forgiveness that you've done or you could share, that if there's something right now, like if they need to pause the recording because it's so alive, or right when they're done, hear it, that they could put into their life to be honest with themselves.
Absolutely. I would say the first step is to acknowledge, you know, and kind of set this framework with yourself and your soul, almost like make an agreement with yourself, because your soul will hear you. And the agreement is that we're going to go deep. We're going to learn to fall in love with ourselves all over again, like we did when we were little babies. Right? Before the world got to us, before we allowed all these rules and limitations to limit our greatness. And say to yourself, I want to make a commitment to do the work, do whatever it's going to take, that so I can fall in love with myself, so that I can shine bright in this world, because I have a big mission. I was born for a reason, just like every other soul on this planet. And it is my responsibility to shine my light in the unique way that I was born for. And you give yourself permission first, because it's not always going to be easy. But if you can make that agreement with yourself, the next thing I would do, honestly, that's been huge for me. And I did this so much, I have not stopped. Every single day since my near-death experience, I write. Now, doesn't need to be perfect. Doesn't need to be long. There's no time limit. Write. Write every single day. I do it first thing in the morning. That's when my mind tends to be clear from the night. And write whatever comes to your mind. You don't have to pick a topic, right? I make things easy for people. You know, write whatever comes to your mind. Write your thoughts. There's times where if I'm really in a struggling place, I will actually write down, as scary scary as the thoughts are in my head, I will write those thoughts down in the journal so I can see them and look at them. Because it's that process of getting it out. Getting it out starts the process of healing. And the point of the journaling is that as you start to relax the pressure and the judgment you put against yourselves on what your voice sounds like, then you can go to the next step and you can start looking deeper into the parts of yourself that you don't like so much. You know, there were parts of me that I didn't like the way, you know, certain things triggered me. And like when they would trigger me, I was like, I don't like myself when I'm triggered like that, you know? And sometimes we want to blame the other, well, that person said that to me. But the truth is, and I know this for a fact now because I've done the work, that same person could say the same thing to me now. It doesn't trigger me anymore. But I had to face it and I had to own it.
Yeah.
Right? And I had to say, when this scenario shows up every single time, whether it's my mother triggering it, whether it's this person triggering it, whether it's a boss, right? Some of you maybe get triggered by your bosses at work. Something is triggering that emotion in you. And through the journaling, through the writing, it's going to bring up the core emotions behind that, right? So if it's anger, really what's beneath that is a lot of sadness. And, you know, at the end of the day, I always say that entrepreneurship is really a personal growth journey, because it's going to test whatever's inside you. It really will. Like every single step of the way, you're going to have to look within.
Yeah. So good. So good. Yeah. So I want to transition just a little bit. And I love that whole piece that you just described. For me, my music, poetry actually lately has become a huge outlet as well in uncovering and revealing. But I know, you know, as we were talking about earlier, you've kind of become this master at looking at adversity or limitations or constraints, or however you want to call them, whether they were after healing and physically being in a wheelchair or actually needing to redesign life in a certain way. And it's kind of the question of, for those listening, how they can look at their own lives, what is here. So I want to transition a little bit into talking about what we were, you know, discussing earlier, and you being this master at adversity and coming from this whole process of forgiving, being downloaded consciousness, bottom of the ocean, scuba diving figures into how do I get this truth out and how do I relay my message. And now I know you've built such a powerful and impactful brand and have this tremendous vision. And so in doing that, you really looked at constraints and limitations and used them to your advantage to lay this blueprint. And so for someone that's hearing this that has their own set of constraints, maybe it's financial, maybe it's time, maybe it's experience, maybe it's a unique combination of everything else, maybe it's physical. How were you able to do that in your own life, and what specific steps might you recommend or practical advice that someone hearing this could take in theirs?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, so my limitations, whether they were physical, I built this brand when I actually couldn't even sit at a computer because I was in so much pain. So to be honest, the first year of this brand, which really set the foundation, I built the whole brand from my iPhone. And I even wrote my number one best-selling book from my iPhone.
So, no excuses, people. No,
right? No, everyone's like, dang. So yeah, it's what it did was I was still human. I went through frustrations like anybody else would when you're you've got time or physical limitations against you, I hit a point where I had to say, and this is going to bring up again what I learned in heaven. We are so much more powerful than the eye can see. We're also so much more powerful than your mind can see. Like your mind at this, even my mind, given what I've seen, I know I'm so much more powerful than I can imagine. So there's a lot of trust in something outside of yourself that has to be agreed upon. When you can establish that kind of trust and just say, I'm just going to go all in. If I'm jumping into entrepreneurship, that in itself is a risk. So if you're willing to take that risk, try this risk on as well. And that is to trust that this world has a lot more resources than your immediate circumstances is showing you. So all that's really required as a first step is a willingness to say, this limitation A is not going to stop me. All right, that's number one. Number two is looking for creative ways. There are an endless number of creative ways to get things done. It's just that it's not what's taught. Because if you look at the world is taught in terms of steps, right? Like maybe you go to school first and you're learning addition and subtraction, and you're learning, okay, you're going to go to kindergarten, then you're going to go to first grade, then you go to second grade, third. Okay, then you're going to go to college. Everything is steps. This whole world, this whole society is built on system structures. And it's based on somebody making that decision of this is what you're going to do. You're going to go to college after 12th grade. Okay. when I had to get creative, when I was in this wheelchair, when I couldn't really feed myself, and I just knew I needed to get this book out to other patients, like, I was a lucky one. I was in a wheelchair and couldn't feed myself, but I was home, right? It's all relative. I was home. So what was bigger than me was the other patients, my friends, that were still stuck in the hospital. So it required me to go outside of myself. And all I wanted to do was to get a book out to these people that were on the bionic heart that I was on and experience the little bit of joy and peace I was able to create for myself on the bionic heart because I decided to have fun with the bionic heart. As scary as it was, I was determined to have a fun life, not knowing if I would live another day on it. And what I did was I went out and we shopped around. My husband went with me and we got an attractive bag. And I wrote this book called How to Rock an LVAD. The LVAD was the name of the bionic heart. How to Rock an LVAD Like a Fashionista. Like, is that logical at all? No, I should be home rehabilitated, right? I should be learning how to feed myself again. But there was a bigger mission. There was something bigger than me. So when what we're talking about is being resourceful. And being resourceful is a hard thing to teach. It comes from within. And the way to access it from within is by finding a vision that is bigger than you. Because when we're stuck on us, looking at us and looking at our problems and our limitations. If I did that, all I would see was this broken body in a wheelchair. I can't even lift, can't even get dressed. I can't even get dressed. Like, who am I to be helping? Who am I to be writing a book for somebody else? Right? That's not logical. That was not in the blueprint when my doctor sent me home and said, you need to rest and take care of yourself. That's what society told me. So to be resourceful, I had to take myself out of my problems. And that's where you get the access. That's when you start to tap into the unlimited creative access to say, wait a second, what if I wrote a book? Now, I can't hold a fork right now, but what if my husband could place a pillow on my chest? And I just lay the iPhone down right in front of my chin. And I just take my one finger and the notepad app and just see if I just write a little every day, what could happen.
Wow. So much, like, even for me happening and just listening to this, like feeling present to my own experiences and just the profoundness of what you're saying. And I think we all, it's so easy to feel like, not stuck isn't even the word, but to feel like trapped, to feel that less than, to feel that you just can't, and to just say, if you actually allow that and pause for a second, but what if I took one small step? I imagine when it was like to your husband, put the pillow on my chest and the notepad app, who knows if that's going to work or not, but it's taking one step. And for those hearing this, it's like an invitation is, what is one step in your life that you could take right now without attachment to the outcome to see what wants to come through? And, you know, I think when things need to come through, we are literally are just the vessels for them, case in point in the book. Yeah. And it made its way out as it needed to. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So profound. I could keep talking to you forever. Sherry's going to be in Italy with us, which is going to be so incredible. We do these business accelerators for anyone that might be new to the show. We'll do another one in November in case you'll be missing us in Italy. I know a bunch of you guys will be joining us there, but I want to transition into the rapid fire round, last part of our segment here, and we'll finish it with a giveaway. So series of random questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, question number one, fill in the blank. If you really knew me, you would know what?
Oh, this is good. If you really knew me, you would know that I get a lot done with very little effort.
I'm like, oh, I kind of want to know more. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Okay, next question. What is one practice that you do daily that you feel like it's kind of like the minimum movement, maximum impact? Like, do this thing, get 10 things out.
Yeah. Yoga, definitely.
Nice. Next question. If there is one truth that you would lay your life for, that the world could realize or actualize, what would that truth be?
That there is nothing that you can't create. You can create anything.
Yeah. Next question. If you could turn back the time to maybe say 25, 30 years old, climbing the corporate ladder, starting your own company, being in that space, what piece of advice might you give to her that you know now?
Oh, that's good. I would definitely say to scale literally as soon as you first come into money. So I think a lot of people think that they can't go bigger, that they can't explode the finances, the teams, all that. I think a lot of people don't really even know what's involved after you start the business. And so my biggest advice is that you don't have to wait. Like, as soon as you get that money coming in, systemize, you know, and scale that business to grow and get yourself, remove yourself as fast as you can from the business.
Yeah, so good. Last question. What does living an unconventional life mean to you?
It means living true to your soul's purpose, living unapologetically, living powerfully, and living a life of no regrets.
Yay. Sherry, Ami, everyone. Sherry, tell us about the giveaway that you have for one of our listeners.
Yeah, so I would absolutely love to give away a strategy session with me on, it's called Master the Art of Storytelling. And I'll share exactly the strategies, the steps, all the key tips that you need that literally took my brand from the edge of my bed, crying my eyeballs out, not knowing how to get out there and share my story, to actually creating a really powerful personal brand leadership platform that's now allowing me to, you know, be at amazing business accelerators like the one we're going to in Italy. I'm giving my first massive keynote speech in front of the world's top surgeons next week in New York City. This has all happened in 18 months, and that is really, my gift has been mastering the art of storytelling and how to effectively get your story literally burned into the minds of your audience, where people want to hear more of it every time.
Yeah, so good. So good. So you guys can head over to unconventionallifeshow.com to get information about how to enter the giveaway. And then, Sherry, how can we stay in touch with you? How can we learn more about your work in the world, your book? How do we keep this conversation going?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can definitely visit my website, which is sherryame.com. That's sherryame.com. I also have a free Facebook group called Live Big, Be Happy. So if you just go into Facebook and do a search for hashtag Live Big, Be Happy, you can join the private group there, and I'm active in there every day.
So good. Awesome. Unconventional Life family, thank you so much for tuning in. Sherry, thank you so much for sharing your story with all of our listeners. Guys, we'll have another episode coming at you shortly. Thanks so much.
Thank you.